LSG Media presents the Walking Dead Podcast. Welcome back to the show, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dean, and joining me as he always does is Mr. Matthew Anderson. How you doing today, Matthew?
So good. How are you?
I'm doing well. We are about to cover The Walking Dead. The Distance.
Oh, I love that title.
Only 43 minutes this episode.
Oh, really?
Felt quick. Went quick, I felt, this week. Yeah. I was like, oh, it's already over. How about that?
This was a fast-paced one. I guess they heard everybody bitching about how slow the other one was. So they're like, fine, we'll trim a couple minutes off the next.
Yes, absolutely. And we want to say thank you very much for coming back to join us. If this is your first time, hello, welcome. We're very happy to have you. And now before we get started, I just want to quickly remind people that if they need flare guns, baby safe applesauce, or windshield wiper fluid, they can do it through our Amazon link at libertystreetgeek.net. So make sure to check us out over there if you need any of those supplies, because you never know when the next zombie apocalypse is going to strike. So you should probably stock up, people.
Mm-hmm. And baby safe applesauce is the first thing to get raided out of Costco's. That's what they always go for.
Yep, 100%. How you doing, man? How do you like applesauce? Is that your favorite?
How do you like them apples? No, it's good. I'm solid. I really enjoyed this episode, and I got to watch this one twice this time. So I'm
nice.
I know it backwards and forwards. It is a sacred text to me now.
Wow. All right. Okay. I'll keep that in the back of my mind.
Is it not the Bible to you, huh?
No, it is not. Speaking of the Bible, not much action from Father Sweaty.
Dude, he comes forward to be sweaty and uncertain about things and then is like, all right, I'll just go back into the background again.
Yeah, I know, weird. So overall impressions about this episode, and then we'll get to our listener comments kind of at the end of this little podcast episode, because of course you guys always chime in and you always give us lots of things to talk about, especially since we're not going to hit everything. You guys are going to find stuff that we didn't, but hold your horses for that. That'll come at the end of the episode, and I'd like to hear what you have to say. Just overall, Matthew, just give me overall impressions. What do you got?
Overall impressions. I mean, I really, really liked this episode, and I liked the last episode a lot, too, and I feel like there were a lot more grumblings about last week's episode, and it was a slow one. It was a slow-paced one, but I think that's an episode we need to have, and especially after finishing this one and finishing it for a second time, I really think we needed the episode right before this to show just how bad a spot they were in. Like, I think that can't be overstated. Like, we have to understand, they have never been as desperate and starving as they were in the episode before this, and I think that plays really heavily into the whole trust dynamic that was at the heart of this episode. And I think this episode pulled it off well. I have no gripes in this one about how anybody really went about anything. Like, a few very, very small things. Like, but I think everybody was reasonable. Everybody did the right play, made the right calls. I liked it. I liked this whole execution of everything.
Well, hot diggity damn, boy. Whew.
We going to disagree?
No, we'll talk about it, pal. This guy's opening the door and letting the Walking Dead come in and just pound his sister. He fucking loves it so much.
Come on in.
My sister's
praise.
Waiting, fellas.
Got to give it that sweet, sweet praise this time around. This has been a good damn season.
Season 5 has been good. I cannot disagree with that. Yeah.
Sanctuary, come on.
I like a lot of the things that you yourself were saying, and that's, you know, the more desperate one becomes, the more you're willing to trust somebody who's claiming to have the answers, right? This is how life operates every single day in many different ways, be it some creepy priest in the corner who's preying on you because you're in a dark place in your world, or a doctor or a psychologist or a fucking school teacher or whatever. Like, and I'm not saying that by default those professions are dirty. I'm just saying that the monsters in those professions, like, that's what I was thinking. You know, that last episode did such a good job of showing us how fucked everything was. And along comes this guy with canned food. He's got sketty rings. He's got water. He's unthreatening and well-shaved and, you know, he has a soft face about him. The perfect recruiter, I guess you could say.
There you go.
And everybody wants to believe. Everybody's so desperate to believe that there's a little bit of slop here. Just going to throw it out at you, buddy. There's a little bit of sloppiness going on here, and I've talked about sloppiness for a long time now, and I don't think the sloppiness is unrealistic, and I don't think it's poor writing. I think it makes sense based off the desperation from where the group is coming from, but there are a lot of questions that need to be asked of this man, Aaron, and they weren't asked, and I'm going to ask them of you, Matthew, and as we get going, and you can answer them for me. But let's just kick it right off. So Maggie kind of just shows up, you know, didn't get permission before bringing her date home for dinner. Just sort of opens the barn door. Hey, hey, how's it going? Brought
Hope
my guy
you're cooking
in.
Enough chicken, Ma.
And this poor guy, say Aaron is a good guy. This poor Aaron guy walks into this barn and sees basically like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre family. You know, immediately Maggie, immediately the older brother starts roughing him up and checking him for stuff. And the creepy bearded dad starts asking him weird questions in the corner. And she's like, oh, I thought this was going
to
go.
Feed him to the grandpa in the wheelchair.
Yeah, or they're just going to feed him to like, they're going to just, you know, throw him in a pen with a bunch of starving pigs kind of situation. You know, that's starting to feel like, imagine this from Aaron's perspective for just a minute if he
Seriously.
Is an innocent man. Like, it's a scary situation, man. You're just waltzing on in here. Maggie's like, oh, I thought I could just have mold for some chicken and green beans. But, you know, joke's on you, pal.
Yeah, you know that not everybody's clamoring for the job of recruiter at Alexandria, for sure.
Father, the daddy, Rick the dad over there is like, you think you're going to bone my daughter, boy, huh? I see you sniffing around.
This is my turf.
This is my turf, boy. Daryl, beat him up a little bit. Bunch of crazy
Rough
hicks.
Till he's soft.
He already looks kind of soft. He starts running his finger along his jawline.
Oh, God. What a horrible picture we're already painting of our protagonist.
Come on. I want the listeners to really feel the pain that Aaron felt, the fear, you know? This is how Aaron's going to recount the tale. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You guys should have seen it. They were all dirty and in a barn.
Yes. They all smelled like horse poop. It was awful.
Oh, God. Yeah, no, I do like the way that, like, Maggie was just like, okay, hey, everybody, here's this prisoner, I guess, like,
yeah, exactly.
Here's this new fucking person, and everybody springs to their feet with guns at arms.
Right. So first things first, probably what you should do is tell your friend to wait outside for a minute while you talk to dad before you just invite him over for dinner.
True. Yeah. Everybody get ready.
I love how Rick is just like, is there something you need? Like, the fuck are you doing here, son? Get out of here. Why are you here? We don't want you here.
Seriously. But you know, one thing, it's funny that they all acted so surprised because, like, I feel like the one thing I was a little bit taken aback by, I was like, you guys weren't waiting to come across somebody, though, especially after the water sitting in the street. I was like, okay, like, you know somebody's right around at that point. I would just be waiting for them to show up, essentially.
That's a good point. And they must have assumed at that point, like, Maggie, I don't think they expected him to walk into the barn with Maggie,
yeah,
you know?
True.
And then it sounds like a dance troupe or something. And I'm like, no, it kind of sounds like a cult community. That's such a culty vibe. I guess such a culty vibe from this guy.
He made that joke at the worst time. Like, this is just so not a time for jokes. You're just like, oh, I know it sounds like a recruiter, like we're just a dance troupe, but that's just on Fridays. And everybody is just not even a little bit.
Yeah, not funny. Not funny at all. And then I like how he's just, see, there's a lot of red flags and a lot of questions, okay? He says, Sasha, hand Rick my pack, right?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like the way he said it. Now I'm going to be like the paranoid Rick in this podcast. So everybody.
Oh, really? Dean, you're going to be the person who takes Rick's angle?
I know that sounds odd. And I know you guys find this hard to believe, but I'm going to probably side with Rick on this one because nobody wants to listen to the guy.
I was actually, as I was watching this, I was like, this is the Rick that Dean has been praying for. It's finally been delivered to him.
Oh, that's beautiful. I mean, I don't think he deserved to give the guy a right cross and knock him out. I thought that was a little much, but I don't mind the suspicion. I don't mind that at all. He's just a sketchball to me. I don't know. But I like how like he starts talking about the camera. Daryl's nobody really gives a shit about the origins of your camera, dude.
No, it's not the greatest camera. We had to do this exposure, and it's got this kind of film aperture. It's like, dude, who shut the fuck up? We don't care about those details at all.
And when they first meet him in this episode, that's what I like about this episode. It starts right off. There's no bullshit in this episode, right?
Yeah. Yeah, nothing. I feel like that's actually been a trend this season that's been continuing very well. All of our openers have been like, let's pick up right from where we were, no fat, like let's just keep going, no bullshit. And I really like that.
Yeah, and before I get into the nitty-gritty of the questions and the red flags and stuff, and when I say red flags, I mean red flags for this guy Aaron and the questions I think they should have asked him. It should go, I should go on the record and say that this is probably one of the best episodes of the season structurally. I think it was just very well done. I thought it was paced well. It starts off where they are with this guy and things move quick. It's tense. We have this great moment in the car. We get this top down shot of the car running over the zombies. Oh, we get another tense moment, and then we get back, and then we have this the end of this moment, these tender moments between Eric and Aaron that, of course, Rick observes. And I just thought it was well paced. And that's why I said it felt like, wow, it's already over. Whereas in a lot of times with The Walking Dead, as they like to take their time, I find myself going, okay, what's going to happen next? What's going to happen next? I get it. You're sad. You got to get over it. You got to go out in the fucking woods and cry. Like, we know all that shit. That doesn't, what's happening? And I guess more feel, it just feels like, I don't know. I just feel like it moved at a good speed.
It did. It did. Yeah, I would definitely feel the same way. I mean, they've been doing better about that as a whole this season, but this is like a good example of how like everything kept moving. We went from, you know, this kind of interrogation scene to a scene of movement. Everything, it never really stopped after this opening, you know, I guess, talk or you know, this exchange between Rick and Aaron.
And I liked the way they injected tension into everything. I liked that a lot. I liked how here's the first inklings that set me off, which set off my spidey sense. When Aaron started referring to people as resources, I was like, be careful of that word. The resources, you're calling these people resources. That was my first red flag, right?
Exactly. Now,
that's, again, you guys are all going to make fun of me because by the end of this, you're going to be like, I'm more paranoid than Rick and I'm sitting in the comfort of my non-zombie apocalypse home.
With your fucking 2 years of food in the basement and all your guns.
Yeah, exactly, right? That's what people are going to start actually conjuring these images of me, which might not be that far off. And he's like, you know, you can make us stronger, yada, yada. And that's when Rick knocks him out. And like I said, that was a bit premature. I don't think knocking him out was really necessary. But there is a lot of talking, a lot of distrust in this early scene. But there needed to be more questions being asked. And that's what I mean by being thorough, not being sloppy. And that's this. Here are the questions I would have asked. Are you ready, Mr. Anderson?
Oh, I'm ready.
One, why are you actively recruiting?
That's a good one. That is a good one. I think I would feel like, I'll go ahead and say this too.
You can answer if you want. You can role play if you want.
That's right. Yeah, no, I definitely want to. But I want to say that I think Aaron's biggest problem was just his, like what you said with the resources, like his choice of words.
Right.
I think he didn't do a good enough job of stepping into their shoes. Because, I mean, like the moment, if I were him, and I get dragged into this barn, and he's been watching them. Him and his Eric, I think was his name. Yeah, him and Eric have been watching them for maybe a week or more,
and like, listening to them.
And
that's important because you can if you tail these people and listen to them and catalog what they say for a week, it's a calculated risk to expose yourself to them. You're pretty
exactly.
If you watched the governor for a week, you'd be like, all right, let's just fucking. Let's get back in the boat and sail home because,
exactly. Fuck,
you know, this isn't going to happen.
But what's funny to me is the way, like, you know, if I were him and I was in this barn and the way they all pointed guns at me immediately, it wasn't like they were suspicious of you. Like, no, they were already ready to take you down in case. So, like, I would have been thinking, okay, not only are these people suspicious of me because I'm a stranger and I'm someone they don't know, they've been through something involving other people. Like, they have been in a trap before. It's not like, oh, they're just wary of one. They've experienced one. And so, like, I would be trying to talk more from the angle of, okay, I don't know who other people you've run into out in the world. Maybe you've been really wronged. I understand that. Like, I would be coming more from the angle of, okay, I'm sure you've been fucked over by other people, and that's why you're acting this way. But he kept coming at it of like, well, hey, guys, like, I know it's rough out there, the zombies and all, but we're good guys. And they're like, yeah, we've heard this pitch before. Like, that's not enough.
Right. And when you set foot in their territory, man, it's like, shit. The instant reaction is does he have a gun on her? Does he have guys outside? Is the building surrounded? What's going on? Is he coming with Maggie to deliver terms? I could see the immediate reaction to draw down on the guy, right? That doesn't bother me at all. So, yes, I can understand that, but that was been the question I asked. Why are you hurting?
Oh, true. Yeah, I got to answer your question. Okay, so, if I'm Aaron and I have to answer the question of why are we recruiting?
It's going to be hard for you to do because you don't know the details of Alexandria.
I know, seriously. I'm just knelt down with a knife to my back of my head right now already. But you could
brainstorm and see if maybe you could figure out why if you want.
Oh, yeah, no, hey, I'll give it a shot. I'm a pro-level bullshitter. Hold on. Let me crack my knuckles and get ready.
I like it.
Like what?
I like it.
But no, I get the sense from the pictures that he's shown that Alexandria is actually really big and not just like, oh, they have a lot of buildings or, you know, this or that, but like just the amount of square miles or acreage they have is actually a lot. And they probably are looking for more people. Like I get the sense that they're at a high enough point in starting a little civilization or camp or whatever, that they're looking for people playing the risk of trying to find somebody who can fill certain roles. Like they have, you know, they have, he mentions later, they have a surgeon, they have these things. So they might be trying to find other people in order to, hey, do you have experience working with cars, fixing engines? Do you have experience helping build houses? We have to build a new shelter to store things. So like they're probably at the point of looking for people to fill roles that are emerging as they grow and not just trying to find people to, you know, stand back to back in the night so we can protect each other. Like they're beyond that and they're like recruiting to, you know, fill jobs.
I like it. Okay. So maybe they're looking to build jobs so they can grow their community. Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Because I think after a community reaches a certain point, like you need people who can help maintain that fence and like fix things. And you're not only trying to find people, you're trying to find skills. And in order to find, you know, in order to find one guy who is highly skilled, you're going to have to go through recruiting dozens of people to find a particular skill or something that you're looking for, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You're playing more of a numbers game.
Right. So do you think that based on the idea that this place has defensive walls, it has a big area, that they must have a critical mass, I'm guessing. They must have a head count where they can top it off to be self-sustaining within that structure, and you just don't think they've reached it yet?
Maybe so. Or maybe even they're looking for more people in order to expand out the wall, keep building onto more of it, and keep it going. Because I mean, it is true. Like it's funny. It's a bad choice of word, and kind of the only choice of word of calling people resources. Because you reach a point where it's like, in order to make the community stronger, or even just like I was saying, like making your tangible items and defenses stronger, you just need a sheer more number of people to man those things and you know, assist in maintaining them.
Right. The bigger it gets, the more it requires, the more effort it requires.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Okay. I like those answers. I would be concerned about making my community too big as water and food seem to be an issue, but that's true. Who knows? But okay. And then the next question I would ask is, have you lost people? Have you lost people? Is that why you're actively recruiting now? Have you been attacked? Have you been attacked by walkers? Have you been attacked by people? How have you dealt with that stuff?
Ooh, that's a good one. I don't know if I could even hypothetically answer that one.
But those are the things they should ask, right?
That is true. That's
and then I would say, what does auditioning consist of? What does that mean? What's the trial? Yeah. How do we audition?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good one. And, even in addition to that question would be, what in, you know, obviously they've passed some level of this audition because they went from observing them to approaching them. And so right. it's like, okay, you've already selected us this far. So what else do we have to prove? Like, that is a good question.
They made it through the phone interview. Now they're going to have a sit down. Yeah.
No, exactly. Now you're going to have the awkward in-person interview about why you want this job, and you can't say the actual answer, which is money.
What happens to the people who fail the audition? Do you just say, okay, sorry, it didn't work out, shake your hands, go your separate way?
True. That, I think, is probably the best question yet of, like, what are you... Because, I mean, maybe they do treat people who've seen where their place is as a liability. So
right.
you let us in and you audition us and then we fail? What the hell does that mean? Yeah.
And have you ever had any blowback by people who failed? Have they come back to attack you? Have you ever had any issues with that? Do you have any enemies?
That's a really good one. I think that's actually, and I've spoiled small things for myself, which I will not spoil for our listeners by looking ahead into some of the comic lore. Even though I haven't read them, I go onto the internet and ruin it for myself. And that's a very good question.
God damn it, Mr. Anderson. Don't spoil ahead with the comic bullshit.
I know. So many of our listeners are comic readers too, though. So I like to kind of know what they know and, like, get an idea of where they're feeling about the show because of what they know from the comics.
The good news is it doesn't follow a lot. There's a lot of deviations from it, which is nice. So, hey,
yeah.
I avoid them at all costs just so I can play these silly games of asking questions.
Can't help myself.
While they're talking, Aaron says, "You're being cautious." I understand. I agree. And I don't. I think they're being cautious, but I don't think they're being thorough. Like, that, this is one of the things he's like, "You know, you're being cautious. I can understand that." That's one of the things he said. And Rick says, "You know, it's hard to trust anyone who smiles after getting punched in the face."
Yeah, that's a good line.
But Aaron's,
although I kind of disagree. I'd kind of be like, "Hey, I just punched that guy in the face. He was knocked out and he got back up and is smiling about it." I'd be like, "All right, well, at least he's not going to hold it against me, I guess."
That's a good point, right? Aaron asks, one of the things Aaron says is he trusts them because they don't turn on each other and they are survivors. Like, I think after observing Rick's group, it would be easy to trust them. So I think it's a calculated gamble, which, so I don't think it's that odd for him to have trusted the group based on watching them. And we covered this a few minutes ago, just based on that alone, you know?
Yeah, I agree. But I think you made a really good point with the whole audition thing, though. I think it really is like, calling an audition after this is like a joke. It's like, no, you observed us and then you approached us. That's the end of the audition. Like, you can't really take that back at that point, you know?
Right. And then one of the things this guy says, he says, "I knew you wouldn't believe me. What would convince you?" And one of the things this guy Aaron does that is a red flag for me is he keeps answering the questions that he presents like he's rehearsed all these possible answers.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Hey, like, he's a typical recruiter.
Yeah. That's a good point. I know what you're thinking, man. You're thinking, what if I go overseas and I get my fucking leg blown off? Well, let me tell you something right now, bitch. Here's what we can do for you, right? It's like one of those situations. He already has the answers ahead of time.
Does it sound too good to be true? Well, it isn't.
It's like in sales, they call that pre-handling objections, you know?
Exactly. Yeah.
It's funny shit.
Oh, man.
So, another red flag for all the amicable things this guy does, and, you know, he doesn't seem to be a stranger to violence, right? Where he says, "Well, we could have set fire to the barn and picked you off as you exited." That shows, like, he's been around the block a little bit in terms of things, yeah. Right? So he's kind of, I don't know, am I being paranoid there?
No, man, I think you're right, man. I think he's got a good eye for tactics. I mean, he makes a good, that's probably one of the better points he makes of, like, look, if we wanted to do violence against you, why would I reveal myself and put myself in danger when I could just sit back somewhere and take you guys out?
Right. Now, let me ask you this. We can't really spoil anything, but your perspective on this guy, was it changed by what you know about the comics?
Well, you know, okay, I'll say this. I watched the episode and then I went and looked into some stuff that maybe kind of happens in the comics, which is not necessarily how it's going to play out in the show, but it gives you a little idea. And I thought, I mean, to be honest, I knew the show, it was going to throw a curveball like this in our direction. Like, these characters are our heroes of the show, cannot only run into completely untrustworthy people.
I thought the same thing.
Forever.
I thought the same thing.
Yeah, and it's like at some point, it's not everybody in the fucking world. And we also like our good guys aren't the only good guys left on the planet. Like right. That's just, you know, that's mathematically unlikely. There's just
It's also silly.
Yeah, exactly. It's so basically it didn't change it too much once it just confirmed a few of my thoughts of like, I think he is trustworthy. I don't get the sense it's another trap. And also, can we say how bad writing it would be if it was just another, haha, gotcha, a Terminus trap, like right again? Like that would be, come on, that would suck.
Right. We have to be careful though, because we're treading into big spoiler territory for people who haven't read the comic.
Oh, true. And that's the thing. It's like, I'm not even necessarily saying like, oh, he's totally just 100% great, ready to be trusted, ready to go. But just like, he's not Gareth. Like, it's not that.
Right. I think it was pretty clear that they were bad guys early, whereas exactly, this guy, yeah. You know, so. But I also had a meta thought here, and I was thinking about this. I was thinking, do you think, and now this is totally from, this is me trying to think how showrunners are going to try to be as politically correct as possible, how they're going to try to make sure that they properly represent the LGBT community, and that are they going to make the first two gay men we've ever seen bad guys? Like, that was me thinking of it from a meta perspective. Like, that sounds like you're committing writing suicide by, you know what I'm saying? Presenting.
No, that's a good point.
Shows rarely present homosexual characters as like protagonists in this type of shit, in science fiction especially.
Yeah.
Or horror, I guess you could say. They're rarely represented as being heroic characters. I don't think I'm going out on a limb to say that, right? That's just the reality. No. They aren't. And that's what I think The Walking Dead is trying to tackle. I think they're trying to say, hey, whatever. So if I start thinking of this from a meta perspective, I can kind of rest back and say, well, they're not going to make these characters bad, are they? Like, are they going to really say, it's been five seasons since we've had two men who are homosexuals who are seemingly together based on the intimacy they shared at the end of the episode when they kissed and embraced and all that shit. Are they really going to make them bad guys? Like, do they really want to do that? Do they really want to? Well, now, I don't know. So I'm ignorant in this. So I don't know. Maybe the listeners can tell me, would that piss off the LGBT community? I mean, obviously there's evil gay people. We get that, right?
For sure.
But would they want to, on their first representation, make them bad guys? You know what I'm saying? So
yeah,
I started to think about it that way. So it kind of made me go, well, I'm nervous for the group, but not as nervous as I guess as I could be because of that in general. That's kind of what one of the things I was thinking.
Exactly. That's a good point. And they got to stop killing all their black men. That's another thing too.
Yeah, no shit.
Like,
right?
Like we pointed out earlier.
That's why I was saying Noah's got to be safe, right? I mean,
yeah, you know, yeah, I'll take Father Gabriel can go down. Let's keep Noah around for a little while.
Right. Right. So what do you think about that? Like, what do you think about that idea? Like, do you think that that's, where do you think, do you think my thought process is off on that with the whole thing with them being the two guys that Eric and Aaron being gay? Do you think that plays into the fact that they're more likely good guys just based on the idea of this stigmatism about that whole fucking thing and the way people write science fiction and horror and shit?
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that's a really good point. I think their only mistake was naming them Eric and Aaron, because I keep going Eric, Aaron, Aaron, and yeah, blending their damn names together, I know, which is right? Annoying. But no, yeah, I think that is a good point. And I mean, that's kind of like, you know, my meta thought was, you know, the idea of that you can't just run us into another, oh, we're pretending to be good, but we're actually bad guys trap. And on top of that is the fact that, yeah, these are your first homosexual characters. You really want to make them monsters, you know, the very right. first time out. So I think right. that's kind of a double, if you want to look at it just from a writing and like PR standpoint, come on. This, I think it throws a little bit of a bone in the direction of maybe we can trust them.
Well, let me tell you something right now, Mr. Anderson. Homosexuals are indeed monsters, okay? They are not to be trusted. They need to be purified in hellfire. They need to be shown the way to Jesus, number one. Number two, I gotta tell you, they shouldn't have been trying to make those boys manly with applesauce. They should have went with steak and potatoes. There ain't nothing queerer than applesauce.
That was a quote taken directly from Scott Gimple. Yikes.
Yeah, I know. I don't know. People are so fucking stupid the way they get all up in a tizzy about shit like gay yeah. characters and men kissing on screen. They're like, oh my God. Oh, yeah. They fucking heading for the hills like the fucking, I don't know, like the goddamn bubonic plague is ripping through the city.
Yeah, seriously. Like, as if, especially as if in this world you wouldn't have way more shit to worry about.
I know, right? So, yeah, I thought that that was interesting. I didn't expect that at the end of the episode, and I was like, oh, right on. Cool. I'm cool with it. But then it made me think meta, and I was like, whoa, there's no way. There's no way they're going to make them villains. That's
true.
Just... She's not going to do it.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't know if I'm being prejudiced. I don't know if I'm being ignorant. I don't know. I was just thinking. I wonder if.
And I do think, I mean, I think it's pretty important the fact that Rick is the one who like notices and sees him. Because when you think about it, they never, I mean, there were people were amicable at Terminus the first time they were there before they sprung the trap or whatever.
Right.
But there was never any moment of like actual caring and tenderness between any of the people there. And I think
that's a great point, man.
Yeah. And when Rick realized like that Aaron like kicked open the car door and went running off the woods and like risked his own life just to find Eric, that like he actually really cares. I think that kind of brought it home of like the governor wouldn't have done that shit for anybody. Yeah. Gareth wouldn't have done that shit for anybody. These people are like real human beings with a heart and feelings.
It's clear that Aaron has more feelings for Eric than Maggie did for Beth.
Oh, shit.
Oh, shots fired.
Drop the mic. Oh, my God. Yikes.
At least whatever Eric and Aaron have is real compared to what Maggie and Beth have. Damn, son. Kids fucking fools up.
Oh, I'm sure Jessica's applauding.
I know. I bet she is. Somewhere she's happy.
Oh, man. We have skipped all around on this one.
That's all right. We got this shit, son. So I do love the best line is Rick saying, just because we're good people doesn't mean we won't kill you.
Yes. That was a good one. That was
awesome.
Very solid.
And then Glenn goes off. The five of them go off. And that's when Glenn starts saying, okay, we're just going to shoot anyone we see. Just blow them away. It's fine.
Yeah. And Michonne, I like Michonne's role in this episode. Because, you know, typically we've thought, especially the way we were introduced to her back in season three, like she's the hardened character. She's the I fucking trust nobody. I'll cut your head off if I think you're looking at me the wrong way.
Yeah.
Kind of character. But, and like I was talking about, and I think maybe the last episode, maybe the episode before, but Michonne is the person in of all the people in the entire group left at this point. She's been this level of mistrusting and hardened way longer and way before anybody else has. And she's like actually come out the other side of it. And so everybody else acting this way, she's been there and done that. I think
right.
It's old news to her. And I think that's why it's actually pretty believable that she's the one who's like, okay, you know what, guys? I learned my lesson from this. You come to a point where you have to start relenting to the idea that not everybody is just a secret Hitler waiting to kill you.
Absolutely, yeah. And we need to really talk about Michonne a lot. In fact, we got to go back to Michonne talking to Rick. And there's plenty to be said about Michonne in this episode, which I really liked. Watching this with Jessica, and she's like, I'm really digging Michonne. And I was like, me too.
Oh, she's my girl.
Now, there's a couple issues I have, but we'll get to that. And it's with Michonne's decision and a couple other people's decisions in this, which we'll talk about in a minute. But before that, I want to go back to my meta point that I was talking about between Eric and Aaron. And that's, I've used meta thinking before. And just to clarify for the listeners, if you're not...
You mean cheater thinking. Gotcha.
Yeah, cheater thinking, yeah. Just to clarify for listeners, meta thinking is just kind of a fancy, up my own ass way of saying, like, I think about it from, like, just a production standpoint. Like, when Bob got bit on the leg, or I was like, are they really going to have another character without a limb? Didn't they just do that? Like, that's meta thinking outside of the confines of the story and thinking, you know, they're definitely not going to kill a black character again. Fucking they've killed too many black people. This is ridiculous. They got to start killing white people. Or, hey, they, you know, they're not going to do this because of this. Like, really, they're going to have... And here's where I've been wrong, though, because I was like, I don't think we're going to see Judith again when she disappeared out of that chair, because I'm like, are we really going to carry a fucking baby around for a whole season? And that's exactly what they're doing.
Exactly.
So I was totally wrong about that. So, and that's what I mean, just so people are like, what the fuck does he mean when he says meta thinking? That's what I'm talking about. Thinking outside of the actual story itself and more thinking, just production-wise, is this going to work, you know?
Yeah.
So, true. Just to clarify. All right, now, let's talk about Michonne, like I was saying. Now,
yes.
here's one of the problems I have. it's completely and utterly unwise to undermine your leader in front of a possible enemy. So I don't like the way people question Rick directly in front of Aaron, because if Aaron is in fact a manipulative, evil prick, he's going to use that as a wedge to get himself to start to work on the group. Do you know what I'm saying?
That is a good point. Yeah.
Don't say shit like, what are you talking about? Like, she does it. Maggie does it. Who else? Glenn does, but Glenn kind of pulls him aside and he's quiet, which is what
I was about to say. Glenn's gotten a lot. I feel like Glenn and Rick have gotten a lot closer, and Glenn's a little bit more on the same page with Rick of how these things go about.
I'm not saying Rick's the dictator and everything he says goes, but it doesn't really matter. I just don't think, and let me clarify, I don't mean in front of Rick in general. I don't mean with Rick in general. I mean if the group's going to discuss possible tactics or ideas or what they think, I think they should do it
with a stranger in the
Get him out of the fucking room when you're going to talk about shit like that. That's sloppy to me. Be wiser in your approach.
You know, and I feel like they actually used to do stuff like that. But there was that big to do back in season two when they got the guy who was a stranger from another camp and they had him in the barn. And that's what they did. They kept him tied up somewhere with somebody watching him. And then when they had to, confer and decide about what they were going to do, they left. They would go outside and be like, okay, what are we going to do with this guy? Blah, blah, blah. That's a good practice. It should be put back into the rules of the Ricktatorship.
Don't say things like, the walkie-talkies are out of juice. How's your firepower? I want to move in groups of two. Stay with an eye shot. Don't be talking this shit in front of this guy, man. Get him out of there.
Yeah. Yeah, that is true.
So back to what Glenn was saying. We started this little segment by talking a little bit about Glenn. He's like, we're just going to shoot whoever we see. And that's when they're discussing that. And that's when we started on the whole Michonne thing.
True, true. Yeah, Michonne kind of just questions that.
Tempering
him. What if they're just like us?
Right, exactly. And then we get the baby Judith with the applesauce moment.
Oh, that's right. it's funny. It's one of those moments where I'm like, okay, yeah, maybe Rick, Aaron made a couple good points of I'm already tied up. You've already expressed the idea that you are totally willing to kill my ass. Why would I kill your daughter in front of you right now? What fucking good would that do me? And that's all solid point, but I'm actually still 100% on Rick's side of, nah, you fucking take a bite, man. Sorry, you're going to have to take a bite first.
Absolutely, man.
And even if it were just for me, take the baby out of the picture. If he would be like, hey, there's this really good food if you want to have some, I'd be like, okay, sure, great. You take the first fucking bite. I don't know you.
And then say that your mom tried to make you manly with applesauce, get the fuck out of here. Eat the applesauce, bitch.
That was one of those things where I think it's going to be a callback to more of his future characterization of how, his mom probably treated him like shit because he was gay when he was young. And, that could be an interesting thing in the future. But I thought that was a weird time to shove in that line. I was like, you could just say, I don't like applesauce. I really hate it. It's, my worst food.
You want
to
be gay? I'll make you eat applesauce.
I'll stuff applesauce into you until you're straight.
You'll eat so much applesauce, you'll be going to bed thinking about vaginas. Mom, this is not working. I don't
Mom
like vaginas.
Like an asshole.
I still don't like them.
It's true. Your mom sounds like a total dick. But
look,
that's
I don't
not
dislike
at hand
them, Mom.
Right
but I'm
now
never gonna love them the way Dad does. Okay.
Yikes.
Yeah, that's crazy. So then we get the little stuff between Rosita and Abraham.
Oh, you know what? I'm glad you pointed that out. That was actually my only spot of dialogue or a scene in this whole episode where I was like, that was kind of a weird spot for this. they come across the RVs, they come across the vehicles. We're discovering that, okay, Aaron wasn't lying. There's the vehicles he said. And then it was just all of a sudden, boom, remember back in the fire truck? Oh, baby, it's okay. Or this kind of weird emotional thing. I was like, wasn't that a while ago now? You're just now talking about this?
Yeah, and then she does the classic... the chick's about to break up with you thing where she's like, it's not you, or the dude's about to break up with you, whatever. It's not you. It's not you, she says. It's all me. I need to, I just need to figure out what I want, Abraham, I mean, it's I know that you're dolphin smooth, and I know we had that time in the bookstore, and it's really good, and we were banging the self-help while Eugene was watching, but it's just, I really got to start exploring my options, I just don't know it's not you, it's me. what the fuck? What is she talking about? It's not you.
It's not you, it's me, and I mean, there's a lot of, there's six fish in the sea right now. I've really got to see what's there.
there's Rick and his Jesus beard. There's Glenn, but he's taken. And then there's Eugene with the, you know, the mullet. So I'm not sure about that. Two gay guys, that rules them out. Noah's young and spry. Maybe I could see how that goes for a little while. Maybe Daryl's an option, but I'm not sure. Daryl might be more into Aaron and Eric. I don't know.
Might have to kill Carol in her sleep, drag her body off and burn it.
Yeah. Yikes.
Ooh, what's coming to you?
All right. So I like when they come back and Rick's like, this is ours now, no matter what. Like, we're taking your food. So there. He's just like, so there. This is ours. So there.
Yeah. This is it. Mine. I don't blame them, but it was just an angry little, like,
it's kind of a dick
bratty
move,
stomp.
Yeah. I didn't like Rick doing that. It was kind of a dick move. But, you know, one of the things listener Carlo said last week was, I hope we get to a point where a group does something, they fuck up something because they are lack of trust. And that started to come through a little bit in this. So that was a good call by Carlos. And I kind of started to feel this way. Like, he's just like, no, we're taking your food. Meh. Meh. Nanny, nanny. Yeah. We got your food.
And you know, I'm not going to lie. I had a flash of, at the very beginning of this, right when they first brought Aaron in and Rick was talking to him, right when Rick started walking towards him, I really thought for a second, I was like, oh shit, he's just going to pull out his gun and waste the fucking guy, and that's going to be it. And then there was going to be all these consequences of, he was actually a good guy, but now you've turned those good guys into enemies, and like that would be kind of like, yeah, like what our listeners said. But of course, it was just a punch, but I really wondered for a second there.
Yeah. There's definitely more to meets the eye, though, than this guy. And that's what I was saying before. Like, there's just too many red flags. Like, when Aaron won't tell Rick where the camp is, but earlier Aaron told him, like, no one can get in or out of this place without us. You know
without
what I'm saying?
Say-so.
Without
yeah.
our say-so. So, like, I would have said that to him. I said, didn't you say it's, like, nigh impregnable? Like, we just want to scope it out. We want to be able to trust you. What, like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And if you're saying you trust us, if you claim to trust us, man, and you've been listening to us for a week and you want us to go through this test, how does it endanger you for us to go scope it out first? You trust us enough to approach us, but you don't trust us enough to know to see if it's safe, if we think it's safe. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You know, but I think one of the best lines Aaron said was when he mentioned, he's like, look, I trust you guys. And I think he said that because him and Eric had been there and been observing them. But he's like, I trust you guys. I'd be willing to bet my life on it, but I'm not willing to bet the lives of my friends on it yet.
And family.
And I think... Yeah, this is a really interesting part, and I even wrote a note as I was watching this scene, and how this is what happens when you have two good guys, two opposite good guys, each exercising caution, run into each other, because they're now enemies. But they're both good guys just being careful and
right.
being cautious with the lives of their friends. Because, I mean, it's essentially like their own cautious, careful suspiciousness is just overlapping and running into each other because they're each just trying to look out for who they care about and not put them at risk. But
right.
at the same time, somebody's got to give. That's the thing. That's what's interesting about this whole dynamic is that in order to trust somebody, somebody kind of has to give a little more than the other in order to start it. And
yeah,
so, like,
somebody has to be to make the first move. Somebody has to do this is like the classic Star Trek thing. Like, we're going to lower our shields first. You could destroy us, but we're going to show you the trust kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Somebody has to risk just a little bit more than the other party. And like, that was kind of the tug and war of this episode of like, he's like, okay, well, look, I normally drive my recruits there. I'm not just going to tell you where it is. And when they're like, well, we don't feel comfortable not knowing where it is. We want to be able to be in charge and go there. And so it was like somebody has to give a little bit. But
right.
So that's the thing.
But here's the kicker, though. These guys didn't. This is the only thing I will say about that whole point you just made is that these guys didn't just run into each other in the fucking neutral zone.
True.
Like, this guy's been actively watching you, and he approached you, and he's going to recruit you. So, like a good poker player who's already seen your hand, like the poker player, he already knows what you fucking have. He can easily leave little breadcrumbs for you to satiate your desire to trust him while still really holding the secret to himself. Do you know what I mean? So he's not really risking much because he already knows so much about these people. That's kind of how I feel, though. I always felt like this guy was holding the cards. I never really felt like they were ever on even ground, even though they had a physical advantage over him in that they grabbed him and they locked him up. He had the information. He had the element of surprise, in a sense, I felt, the whole time.
Yeah. No, that's true. That's a good point. The fact that, like, he doesn't have as much to even put at risk.
Yeah,
because,
right.
You know, no matter what, at the end of the day, he could have just turned around and gone back home, back behind walls, and they don't have that option. And that's a good point. But at the same time, it's like, in a world where you could run into some fucking group of people like Joe and his guys, where it's like, if they were able to actually play nice and play it cool for a minute just in order to get inside of Alexandria and then go on a fucking killing spree, you know, I could understand them being cautious in the way that they are of finding people.
Yeah, of course. And it's a huge risk to step into that barn. He took a huge risk. I know it's calculated. Yeah. I know he's got the facts. I don't want to make it sound like he knows what's going to happen, because he really doesn't. I mean, he has a pretty fucking good indication that he's going to be safe, but still, you're risking your life approaching this group.
Oh, yeah, for sure. No, yeah, that's, I mean, even just him, and that's why I think he waited until, you know, he saw Maggie and Sasha go off on their own, probably thinking that, okay, maybe they won't be, because if it was just Rick and Daryl on their own, don't fucking approach. Don't. That would just be, he would be with a bullet through his eye and an arrow in his chest, and that would be the end of it.
Right. And then they decide to go on this road trip. You have your own house, Michonne asks, exclaims. Yeah. She's like, whoa.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, and I like how her first time, like, she actually circles back a little bit to being suspicious when she's like, why are there no pictures of your people?
That's a great question.
Such
another question that should have been asked ahead of time. But then they go ahead. Then he starts making up some bullshit about exposure, and he stumbles. He gets nervous. And then they ask him these three questions, which I like. But listen, these three questions aren't like some fucking mystical incantation.
I know.
That's going to get people to tell the truth. Like, did you ask him the three questions?
Pull out the stones and arrange them so you can ask the questions.
Quick, Michonne, dribble a bit of blood over the questions, because then he will be forced to tell us the truth. It just doesn't make any sense. It's not fucking sorcery.
But it's like, of course, and the questions you can't necessarily even answer, like, how many walkers have you killed? Like, I don't fucking know. I didn't keep a tally as I was running through the woods smashing heads to stay alive.
Keeping track of how many walkers you kill is for pussies. Yeah, like, what are they going to do? Like, that's what I was thinking. Like, those questions aren't, okay, great. Those are the questions. There's more pressing questions they should have handled in the barn. But hey, what are you going to do?
But it was a valid moment of suspicion. But I think that was, again, another time where, like, their suspicion is overlapping with Aaron's suspicion of them. Because if I were in his position, I don't know if I would want the people I'm recruiting, even people who I'm interested in recruiting, I don't know if I'd want them to see the people who I have and get an idea of the number we have or what people look like or how strong are the group of people looks like. You know, that's you're giving them all this stuff to calculate to. So I can kind of see maybe the reticence and being like, oh, I don't really want to show you pictures of everybody.
Yeah, that's possible. But then why would he have said, oh, I had a group picture? Because a group picture is like the quickest way to get an assertion as to how many people there are. He could have just shown a couple of kids playing, a guy sitting in a fucking chair with a guitar, a dude petting a dog, like stupid little shits like that to make these people feel safer.
We live in a Norman Rockwell painting.
Dude with a pitchfork, you know, a bunch of picture of all the hot chicks Rick's going to have to be able to pick from, you know.
A kid putting his shoe on, but the dog running away with the shoe, that pesky old hound.
A dude shuffling along in his PJs with a bum flap open, you know, cute little things. Pictures of Christmas trees. Crazy.
Oh my God. They're like, hey, Aaron, we can tell you just snipped out pictures from a calendar.
It'd be awesome if there was some crazy, like, X-rated picture from Aaron and Eric that got in there. It's like, oh, well, whoops, get rid of that one. Didn't mean for that one to end up in that pile. Not sure how that got in there. Whew.
Yeah.
Whoops, that's not supposed to be in there.
Nice.
So, zombie killing car. I love this part. I love when the car just starts creaming zombies. They hit them by accident. And hit so many fucking zombies that the headlights are red. I love it. It's so cool.
Those zombies are getting softer all the time. They're rotting up. They're getting ripe.
Just blasting them. Looks like they drove through a watermelon patch.
Oh, God, yeah. And they have gotten so good with these sequences. Like, they just, it looked awesome. That was such a good sequence.
That moment was one of my favorites of the entire season, just from a pure horror perspective. I loved the red lighting. I liked the red filter on the camera. I liked the way they're like, what's going on? We can't see out the window. And they're looking at the map. Which way are we going to go? You know, I liked that whole moment. It was just cool. It was tense and I liked it.
Oh, and I love the fact that they didn't split up the narrative at that point.
Right.
Okay, what's going on back at the RV? What's going on back at the car? Like, no, RV gone. We can't see what happened to it. It adds that little bit of tension. And I love that you didn't even like see them turn off or anything. They are just fucking gone.
And then when Aaron sees the flare, he freaks out and he goes.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was cool.
I love how he was, and he wasn't only just like, oh, let me out. He was like, it's off, it's over, fine. He was basically saying, I don't give a shit anymore about whether you guys come back with me or not. Fuck it, I don't care, I'm out.
Because he knew that his lover was in danger, and that's like awesome. That's what makes it cool, where he's like willing to just say, fuck this whole recruitment thing, I'm going home, I need to help.
Yeah, yeah, that's I think one of those things where when later on Rick does go back to see what you know, what Aaron was on about when he ran off, it's like it makes sense of like, oh, you actually give a shit about people. Like, okay, all right, sure. Add some legitimacy.
Or a person, let's not get crazy. Or just a person. I'm sure Hitler loved his wife.
He's ready to slaughter everyone else.
Yeah, I'm sure Hitler loved his wife.
So they say.
So then I like the moment where Glenn's backing up and firing the pistol, and it's like strobing. That strobing effect, and you could see the walkers. They looked so cool.
And then, of course, Every time I tell myself I'm going to be better than this show and it getting me with the whole fucking, oh, this walker's going to tickle this character and get up on him. And I'm like, I'm always like, of course Glenn's not going to die right here, right now. But it gets me every time.
I know. It's spooky. And then we get that beautiful flare in the face.
Yeah. Oh, that was good.
Lights up his head like a jack-o'-lantern.
Yes. That reminded me of the original Resident Evil games. Did you ever play those?
Oh, yeah.
They remade them for the GameCube, but the remade releases were so fucking amazing. They were absolutely incredible. But one of the best things that game introduced was these defensive weapons for when a zombie actually grabbed you and got a hold of you. You couldn't, you know, shoot them with your gun. You could kind of just wrestle them. But you could have a defensive weapon, one of which was a flashbang, and you would just take the flashbang and just stick it in their mouth.
Awesome.
And their head lit up just like that. Like, I had flashbacks from fighting a zombie in a hallway at this scene. I was like, oh, badass.
That's awesome. Yeah, I liked it, man. It was really cool. I totally forgot about that, but I was a huge Resident Evil 1 fan. That game blew my mind. I'd never seen anything like it.
Oh, my God, so good.
You know, flare in the face, we get the red filters, Daryl doing his country whistles.
Oh, yeah. I was like, did they design a little whistle code for them to have now? Yeah, that's a good idea.
Thunder flash. Fucking Band of Brothers. So the group reunites, which I like. Aaron reunites with his lover, and we find out that Eric likes Maggie, and they kind of talk a little bit, which I like. They talk about the license plates and stuff like that. And meanwhile, Rick's just kind of watching him, right? He's in the shadows observing.
He's just being bi-curious.
He steps out of the shadows. He's like, hey, you guys are gay or something? That's fine. We're okay with it. We're progressive here, man. It's cool.
You want another?
Yeah. Hey, man, listen. If I shave my beard, can I get in on that?
Nice.
Oh, man. This is where Aaron says, I owe all of you. I will pay that debt when we get to Alexandria. Maybe we can hit the road tomorrow morning. And that's when, you know, this is where Maggie questions Rick in front of the group. My favorite thing.
Yeah. Oh, everyone's favorite character, Maggie.
And then they take the ride to Alexandria, and that's when Noah talks to Aaron, and Aaron reveals that they have a surgeon and stuff like that, and his name's Pete. He can do amazing things.
Yeah. See, that really does. That one comment alone was like really added to the size of Alexandria in my head. I was like, well,
right,
fuck,
me too.
You've got a surgeon who actually has tools and a safe enough space to be able to do these kinds of things. That does say a lot.
Yeah. Is this going to be better than like a Civil War tent with like a saw?
Yeah, I've got anesthesia. I mean, a jug of rum.
Like Herschel style. Just bite down on this, okay? It's going to hurt.
It's going to hurt like hell.
So, and then of course the camper breaks down and then Michonne's like, the fight's over, and she's getting a little too optimistic for me here. The fight has kept you warm and fed and alive. The fight turns on you. You got to let it go. She's trying to console Rick. And that's when Rick does the great line about his family. And listen, I can't just drag my family into this thing. It was quiet at Terminus. It was quiet here. We need to be careful. And that's when Rick's like, I need to take a moment. And he goes off and he stashes his gun in a fucking blender.
Don't blame him at all. It's one of those things. And I'll say too, Carol, her line as they actually pull up and get to the gates of Alexandria, her line sums up my feelings of Rick in this whole episode like perfectly, of where she says, hey, even though you were wrong, you were right. You were still right. And that's exactly
awesome.
How I feel about this.
Yeah, that was
where
awesome.
Like, it's one of those things where, yeah, maybe his judgment in here in this particular circumstance was off. This is somebody we can trust, blah, blah, blah. His caution was not, misused at all. I mean, like, it's still totally valid.
I could see, like, years later, The Walking Dead, everything's better. Everyone has families. Rick's, like, new wife or whatever, or husband. I don't know what way he's going to go. Starts like snooping around the house, finding shit like, oh, your socks are in the bread cupboard again. God damn it, Rick. Fucking guns in the pantry and just crazy, like fucking PTSD. Starts doing weird shit like that all the time.
It's like the fucking Punisher house where you smack a drawer and just a friggin' gun ejects.
Yeah, this is like video games. This is why you find guns in weird places like Resident Evil. Like, oh, a gun under the rug in the pantry, like, or whatever.
That's not inconvenient.
Yeah. Oh, what's that doing here? It's a good thing I found ammunition in the tub. Now I can fight zombies in this video game. Oh, so, man. Yeah, that's the episode, man. It was definitely good stuff, and we'll wrap our final thoughts after we hit some listener feedback. So let's hop to it. All right, we got some great participation as usual. Matthew, why don't you kick this off?
Sure thing. I will kick it off with a name that shall ring familiar to all, Jessica Vezina. And she said, I like this episode way more than last week. Number one, hitting a million zombies with the car was amazing. The zombie
it was
that
pretty
got
awesome.
Oh, fuck yeah. That totally. I can't fawn enough about that sequence. That was badass. Number two, the zombie that got shot with the flare was amazing. Number three, Rick and Michonne are clearly about to fall in love if they don't get murdered by people in Alexandria first. Yes, that scene where they're sitting in the car and Rick is still kind of like gripping the steering wheel, looking at the gates, and she reaches over and puts her hand on him. I was like, this is it. This will come to fruition.
It ain't just that way. It ain't just the way she put her hand on him. It's the way she was looking at him. She's like,
oh, yeah,
I'm going to eat this white boy up.
Big time. And I am all ready for it. And number four, I love Eugene as serious as two dogs copulate.
That was a great line.
I missed that line on both my viewings. I just heard him say something and it was kind of mumbled. And I was like, whatever, you fucking weirdo. I didn't know it until I read Jessica's comment here. That's awesome.
Nice.
And then she said, and most importantly, the actor who plays Aaron clearly got the role and watched Michael Emerson in his first full episode of Lost, when we still didn't know he's Benjamin Linus. Oh boy, if there's anybody who's watching Lost right now, you're probably mad at Jessica. But the things he said, the way he spoke...
He is a creep. I'm sorry, keep going.
The things he said, the way he spoke, also reminiscent of Ben Linus. This episode gave me such a Lost vibe.
Here's what I'll say. I am not a Lost expert, but this guy definitely had that vibe to me as well. He had that kind of like, hey, I'm just this benevolent guy. It's cool, man. Hey, what's going on?
I don't eat babies.
We got walls. We got everything. We got everything your heart's desires. Come on in. It's going to be fine. Nice. All right, let's go over to Karen Loma's super fan. Love the Rishon, she said, chemistry.
Yes.
If I may make a prediction besides... Negan, I don't know what that means. N-E-G-A-N?
Oh, I do.
Oh, you do?
Oh, I do indeed. I'm not going to say anything else.
Is that a comic book thing, you fuckers?
That is a comic
book thing. You sons of bitches with your comics.
How dare there be source material?
Fucking bullshit. Shut off the internet. All right. If I make a prediction besides Negan, their biggest obstacle is going to be themselves. They may have been out on the road for too long and they have lost their social skills. They were okay in the prison because it was their prison to run, but in a society where they have to fit in, they're going to find it damn near impossible. That's going to be a big problem. Did you see the preview of Daryl crouched in the corner? He looked like he needs a hug. Absolutely love when Rick made Aaron eat the baby food to make sure it was safe for Judith, and then he tasted it himself like a good dad should. Good call, Rick. Thought for sure there was going to be Chinese takeout. I guess the walkers ordered Chinese takeout. She thought Glenn was going to be toast, but he survived. Overall, it was a very intense episode from beginning to end. Loved Michonne picking the walker parts out of the car. Yeah, that was badass.
Yeah.
Another day in the life. Did you see Michonne's eyes light up when Aaron said that he put the license plates on a wall in her house? Yeah, she did. She definitely had this like super optimistic glow, like hit her, like, you have a house? Not even like, you have a house? Like, it was like, whoa, that's amazing, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because we forget. I mean, like, Michonne was a freaking mom and a wife, essentially. Like, I think she really does miss that life and, like, the idea of having your own space again. Like, fuck, that's got to sound nice.
Hey, man, you got one of them color TVs, man? Damn, you got a color TV. No kidding.
Hot damn, y'all rich as hell. But no, I wanted to say one thing too that Karen brought up about, you know, Michonne ripping the arms out from the car. Also in that scene, when right before they started going again and Glenn got out and slopped off the walker goop with his bare arm, I was like, fuck, they are desensitized at this point because that made me want to puke.
It's funny. I was thinking, how much does this suck? You're not going to be able to get that shit off of there, man. You're not going to be able to see.
Like, oh my God, his arm is caked. He's like,
man,
it.
This blood is really streaky.
Oh, yikes. Oh my gosh. All right. So
she
I've
can
got
die. Hold your roll, son.
Oh.
Easy there, flock of seagulls. So Rick examined that the car they drove in the daylight, but he never found that huge bug. That's a great point.
Wait, what was that?
Remember where they're like, you've been listening to us? And they hold this big ass, like, World War II looking radar dish.
Oh, yeah.
But during the daytime, he didn't see that when he was going through the car. That doesn't make any sense. That's a great point. That might just be a fuck up on the show's part.
Yeah, true.
Anyway, and then she says, how did he miss all that? Okay. Yeah, great point, Karen. I completely agree with you. That's great observation about the way Michonne's eyes lit up at the thought of having a house. And I don't know shit about Negan, you bunch of comic reading jerks. So that's all I got for you. But great, great as usual, Karen. Continue what you got for me, Mr. Anderson.
Ooh, I have got Miss Christina Brown. She said, Carol was the most suspicious of Aaron aside from Rick. I think Carol was hesitant to go to the ASZ, which is Alexandria Safe Zone, because she said to Daryl in last week's episode that she can't let herself feel it. I think deep down, she's afraid that if she gets to ASZ and has a chance to let her guard down, all the trauma she's been avoiding will flood her. Things like Sophia's death, her killing Karen and David, having to put Lizzie down like a rabid animal, all these things will finally come to the surface. Good point there. And that's, I haven't thought about Carol a lot in the past couple of episodes. And like we kind of, you know, the big part of her arc, I guess, ended with, you know, the opening, she had her big moment, and then she's kind of gotten to kind of go back down behind the scenes a little bit. But that's a really good point. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. That reminds me a little bit of what we were talking about when we were talking about, you know, Star Trek VI and the Cold War, and like all these warriors are like, what are we going to do when this is over? Like, what's going to be our life? Like, there's almost like this kind of fear at that change. Like, what's going to happen when we're just civilians again and we're not survivors, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
That and confronting all your fucking demons at the same time. It's scary to think about that. So that's a great email. I really appreciate that. She also said that when I say Karen, I sound like Ray Liotta. I don't know if you caught that part of the thing, because she said she's from the South. So I obviously have an accent.
Karen.
Which is funny, because every time I used to imitate Ray Liotta from Goodfellas all the time, I'd be like, Karen, I got to worry about getting whacked in the streets. I got to come home to this. Like, he always gets pissed off. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, that's good.
So yeah, I appreciate that. That's funny shit. That made me laugh. I read that while I was at work today. All right. Philip Childers. Great episode. I think we may have a few episodes of some happiness, or at least some feeling of safety. Then, of course, Alexandria will burn like everything else. Yes, that's probably true, Mr. Childers. So thank you for that. Go ahead, Matthew.
You know, I was going to say to that comment, though, I'm kind of interested in the idea of seeing the first place they go to that has to be defended, like, long term. Like, what is it like? Because, I mean, we kind of saw that with the prison that lasted, what, a season, maybe a season and a half total at most. But like the idea of a place that would last for like 2, 3, 4 seasons, like what do you have to change? What do you have to add to a place to make it last that long?
Right.
That's kind of an interesting conflict, I think.
Sure, sure.
But who knows? Anyways, I've got Deborah Mercuro.
And she Deborah. Said,
I love how Rick stays cautious and focused. That is why he is so badass.
See, stop right there. Can I get a fucking amen? Jesus Christ. Everyone's making fun of me because they all think I'm a fucking, I don't know, a Rick apologist. Well, I am, okay? All right, continue.
I love my Rick. I'm never against him. But... and she goes on to say, I'm really hoping this will be a place for them to stay for a while. I'm sick of them being wandering warriors. Although I kind of like it. I got to say, Deborah, I kind of like them being Ronins just wandering in the woods. But and then she says, when Michonne started asking Aaron questions about having pictures of his people in the car and the music changed so perfectly, I was like, oh, hell yeah, it's about to get real. but I'm getting the feeling that they only want them because their camp is empty and they need help. I could be wrong. And by the way, is Abraham not looking overly beastly in this episode? Lay off the roids, buddy.
Nice. He's been holding out. That's why he wanted those cans of, you know, spaghetti rings. He's like, God damn, man. Get hungry on these roids. I'm starving.
I could definitely squirt some horse testosterone in these.
How else is he going to keep up with Rosita, who's looking hot as fuck, by the way?
True. She's staying fine.
That was good. Good stuff, Deborah. Thank you. All right, we got Mickey. Mickey said, I really like this episode. We've seen in the episodes leading that the group's moral compass is spinning in circles and that Rick's sole purpose is to keep everyone alive at all costs. You guys mentioned before that those that waver get killed and only the strong will survive, but I think now you see the moral compass pointing north again for several of the party members. I do like after they arrive, Carol tells Rick that they may have been wrong, but he still had the right idea. At this point, it will take a lot for Rick to trust anybody outside this group. Was it me, or did it seem like Gabriel seemed a bit more decisive in his expressions now that he burned his collar? I wonder if he's being sarcastic there, because we didn't see anything from Gabriel. Oh, one final comment, then I'll be quiet. Do you remember Topher Grace's character in Predators? He was this out-of-place geeky guy who was completely non-threatening. By the end of the movie, you realize he's the most vicious predator there was. That's who Aaron reminds me of. He's way too eager and nice, and maybe Rick puts up with that, or he's so far gone trusting people that this is his only reaction. That's a great email. And, you know, it's interesting that you're talking about the moral compass and maintaining that and making sure that they can not just be in survival mode, which is some of the same sentiments were echoed by other people who chimed in. And it's true, like, you have this whole survivalist thing, but then you need to maintain that moral compass and stuff like that, which I really like. And then the thing that Mickey said about about Gabriel seemed a bit more decisive. I have to assume that that's sarcasm because it made me laugh out loud because you didn't even see the guy in this episode.
True. It's funny that he brought up Topher Grace's character because I had totally forgotten. I'd seen Predators, but I'd forgotten he was even in that. And I'd forgotten about that whole subplot where it's like he turns out to be the bad guy. I'm
right.
Like, fuck, that's interesting. That's kind of a good point. But I think this episode went to pretty great lengths to try and show... To try and convince us, the audience, that Aaron was not a bad guy by showing that he's like a human being with tenderness and stuff. It didn't leave a lot of, by the end of the episode, I mean, it didn't leave a lot of room to go, well, I don't know, I think he's just a fucking snake.
Yeah, I think the final scene is really like meant to show us, not the final scene, but the scene where Eric and Aaron reunite is really meant to show us that this guy is definitely someone that you can trust. Now, whether or not they have all these people, whether or not they have this or that over there, it could just be two guys out on their own just trying to become friends with a group to survive, you know? Yeah. So I don't know, who knows? But yeah, I thought that was kind of interesting.
Oh, and I've got a quick one by Christian Cortez, who's pretty, he kind of just reaffirmed some of our love for the same line. He said, loving Rick's new meet and greet techniques, an effing punch in the mouth.
Nice. That's awesome.
And his line, just because we're good people doesn't mean we won't kill you. Ready to put a knife at the base of your skull.
Yep.
God, I love that line. That was
love that. Love Rick. Love him.
I'll always love the man. I will always be Glenn. I might question him every now and then, but I'll always stay at his side.
All right. Damaris.
Nice.
Leave it to TWD to progress its storyline and leave so many unanswered questions. I'm curious to see this audition that Aaron spoke of. Me too. Very much so. Mm-hmm. And what if one member of the group failed to make the cut? I said the same thing. Exactly. Ooh. That's what I was thinking. What if somebody fails to make the... What if you audition like... the whole group, and they're like, well, we can take six of the nine of you. Fuck, that's not going to work, right?
Yeah. And that's the thing. That's why, I mean, like, I think that whole audition thing is moot. Like, you approached us, then therefore you've accepted us. Like, that's that. Like, it's done. Yep. Your selection process ends at when you approach.
Then she said, love the tip of the hat for Dale. Did you catch that?
You know, it's funny. I did, and I didn't catch that right away. On my second viewing, I did. That was Glenn knowing where the extra battery was on the RV.
Right. That was sick.
I like that. That was, and he didn't even say, I love how they didn't hover on that. He wasn't like, he could have been, he stopped for a moment and like leaned on the RV with a wistful look to the sky. I knew, God. Because of an old friend. Like,
and then flashback to Dale getting his guts ripped out.
Just... some horrible thing. Yeah. They just had a nice, like, we as the audience, we know what that is. And that was perfect. I liked it.
Pretty cool. What do you got for me?
I have, let me see. I have Terry Mitchell said, I know Michonne has been pushing for something more stable the last couple of episodes, but she seems way into the idea of following Aaron blindly. How did Rick not find the stuff in the car
Yes.
when he was looking, Yes. even in the daylight? So that's our second listener saying, what the fuck? That I think they just dropped the ball a little bit on that one. And also said, I must say, the zombie car wash was fantastic. That went on for a bit too long.
Zombie car wash.
Super, so good. And you know, that probably would get at least the base grime of your car off just by in a wash with zombie blood.
Oh, that was awesome. I loved how the car was just totally red. It was great.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, and then also said, Glenn's hesitation was a nice touch. And it took me a second to know what they meant by that. But do you know what they mean by that?
Glenn's hesitation for
saving Aaron when he's pinned against
the
tree. Oh,
yeah, that was awesome. That was
I like
great.
That. And I liked it, but I was also like, come on, dude, go fucking save the guy. Like, I get your thing, and I get, eh. But it was a good, it was an interesting part of his characterization, because we've seen Glenn go from so different, you know, a place to where he is now.
Yeah, absolutely. Good stuff. Thanks for that, man. And then we got Jesse Privet. Jesse here. Just wanted to just watch it. And I must say, Rick doesn't have any more fucks to give. And he has a mean right cross. The first half of the episode was intense, especially when they were driving through the crowd of zombies. I just knew they would rear end a stranded vehicle. And we haven't had this bad of a cliffhanger in a while. Left me wanting. Yes, we have not had a cliffhanger in a while. I completely agree. It's about time we got one. That's a great point.
Yeah, yeah, that is true. And I really liked, what I especially liked about the very end of this episode, and we didn't really talk about it, was the kind of throwback to Rick's line where he was saying, what did you hear at Woodbury? What did you hear at Terminus? And how was she saying, well, nothing. I can't hear anything from the outside. You can't really judge it from the outside.
Yeah.
But we got that really beautiful shot of like a close-up on Rick's face, and you see his like expression kind of relent a little bit.
Yeah.
Because what he's hearing is children playing. Like, yes. You can actually hear kids playing behind the wall. And that's like for the first time. It's like, holy shit. Because even when Woodbury was still under the illusion of it being good, there was no kids playing in the street, really. Like, it was still kind of like a weird, kind of a curfew situation and stuff. Like, nothing sounded normal. Nothing sounded happy, and absolutely nothing at Terminus. So I think that's what really helped do it for Rick.
You and I have talked about this before. The sound of children playing is like the one thing that goes away in the apocalypse. I think Jessica and I talked about this when we covered Children of Men. Because in Children of Men, the whole premise is that it's this post-apocalyptic world and there's no more children. The oldest person's 18 years old because people become infertile, blah, 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 blah. And there's a shot where they're standing in this playground and there's no kids. And, you know, there's this something about that sound that's just, you know, love, you know, if even if you're not like, oh, kids are annoying, but like the sound of children playing, there's few things in the world as beautiful as that to remind you that you know, despite the bullshit, there's still this sort of innocence out there. And for Rick's expression to do what it did when he heard those kids was fucking great. I loved it. That close-up shot, the close-up of his eyes, that's going to be the episode image I use for sure. Mike screenshotted it. It's such a great moment in this show. And Andrew Lincoln continues to impress me. And I'm very much looking forward to what happens in the next few episodes here. And I just want to say thank you very much to everyone who sent in comments. Of course, you guys make it fun. Of course, you point out shit that we missed, absolutely, as you always do. And I like that, man. It's good stuff. We're glad to hear from you guys. So wrap it up, Matt. What do you think is going to happen at, going forward here?
Ooh, going forward.
You don't have to predict too much, but just you know, give me some general stuff.
Yeah. And I mean, I got to say, I don't really have like any solid predictions other than my continuing hashtag Rishon. It's going to happen. This will be the place. They will have their nest and make sweet, sweet television. Love, that's gonna fucking happen. But as far
Ebony
as any other
and Ivory,
no, it's gonna be Whitney Houston's "And I Will Always Love You." That's what I demand. No, be the soundtrack.
fucking Bodyguard.
But no, yeah, I mean, like we've been saying, I feel like this was a stellar episode, and especially the ending. Like, I really love the way it concluded. I really love, you know, the fact that this is the first time they believe that, hey, maybe we actually have a future. Like, and like the sound of children playing is like a perfect, you know, way to lay that out of like, maybe the world will continue. Maybe there is some kind of hope for humanity continuing. And I think maybe we will, even though we talked about this a little bit too, of how originally there was all this talk about how Terminus might be the big set piece for a whole season when they were on their way to it. Like, oh, they're going to get to Terminus and that's where we're going to see season 5 play out. And boom, they kicked that shit to death right in the first episode of season 5 and we're on the road again.
Yeah.
I think Alexandria now is going to be our set piece, and we're going to actually see, you know, some interesting things play out in one place.
I'm nervous about a couple things, and here they are. Number one, one of the things said in the earlier part of the episode was something about, you know, when Judith cries, no one will hear her inside the walls, right? That he made it a point to say that, Aaron did, if you go back and watch the episode.
Yeah.
And then we get to the gate, and that's all we hear is kids making noise. Part of me thinks that that's bullshit, like it's a fucking recording. I'm not even joking. I know I'm super paranoid. Yeah. I'm like, there's no way those are fucking kids out there. Nobody greets them at the door. There's nobody standing on the wall. There's no activity. So I'm like, where are all these fucking people? That's my first instinct, which is, do I trust those kid noises or could it just be that some fucking recorder? Of which I don't know. Maybe they use it to fucking relax. Maybe it's, I don't know. I know it's not fucking Terminus. I know they're not luring them to their death. I know that. They're not going to do that again. That's fucking played out. But kids, really? I'll be shocked if I see kids in the next episode.
In the very next episode, maybe so. I don't know. I do.
Well,
I
heard them, so they're within earshot, right?
They're somewhere in there, and there's got to be some kiddo. And I wouldn't be surprised if they have some kind of like policy of when we first roll in new people who we've never interacted with before, everybody go home for a little bit while we escort
audition
them around.
And
audition them, yeah. Make them jump hoops or fucking drink as much milk as they can in 10 minutes or some weird shit. Whatever fucking audition that's going to be.
They start doing some Joe Rogan Fear Factor shit. They make them eat a plate of animal dicks.
Yeah. They would, oh God, you kidding? They would scarf them down like they were the best. Like it was a bowl of popcorn right now.
No shit, right? Awesome. Well, great time. I had fun doing this one. This is a good time. And I very much look forward to getting this up and letting you guys enjoy it. So, yeah, that's what I got. I'm suspicious. I'm still suspicious. I can't help myself.
I think I have a little more hope than you, but but I also am a spoiled internet spoiling fucker who looked ahead. So I don't
you
know.
You fucking bastard. All right. You guys have a good night. We'll catch you next time. See you later. Hey everybody, this is Dean with LSG Media, and I just wanted to say thank you very much for stopping by to check out our coverage of The Walking Dead. If you head over to libertystreetgeek.net, you can see what other podcasts we have going on, like the Science Fiction Film Podcast. We also have ways to support us if you click on the support tab, and of course, one of the best ways to support us is to offer us a rating on iTunes or Stitcher or both. All right, guys, we'll see you next week. Have a good one.